Today's episode of Talking Tom is in memory of Penny Marshall, who passed away yesterday, December 17th, 2018. Along with a prolific acting career in film and television, she also directed several movies, including the Tom Hanks classics Big and A League of Their Own.
On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we're headed back to the 1930s to watch The Green Mile, starring All I Want for Christmas, Tom Hanks.
The Green Mile is a 1999 fantasy crime drama film written and directed by Frank Darabont and is based on the Stephen King novel of the same name.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
What's up, Hanks heads? Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Tom, the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and then we talk about them.
I'm looking at all my notes and there's so many underscored red lines of spelling mistakes and I'm really embarrassed by them.
Oh, good. Well, good thing everyone can see them in this recording.
It just came up and I felt really stupid.
My name's Josie.
I'm Daniel.
And today we sat down and watched the perfect Christmas movie. The Green Mile.
It really is a great Christmas film. Yeah. Everyone always remembers it as that. Everyone always talks about how much they love it as a Christmas film.
Fills your heart with a holiday spirit.
Yeah.
I think this is a great one to close out the year with.
I think so. If you want to be in like the mindset for like optimism in the new year, this is where you go.
Yeah. Well, before we get into it, We should talk about what's been going on.
It's the end of the year.
Yeah, we made it. Another year.
Yeah.
I've been doing some cool stuff. I went to the Fleetwood Mac concert.
I have
a shirt Fleetwood on. Mac on right? Yeah. If you'll remember, listeners of the show will remember that I recently discovered Fleetwood Mac about 8 months ago. Turns out they're pretty good.
And still playing. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Like you like them and then conveniently they're now.
They like went back on tour. Yeah.
How was it? Was it the Forum? It was
transformative. Yeah. It was at the Forum. Lindsey Buckingham isn't with Fleetwood Mac anymore.
Yes.
Two people replaced him, and it was bomb as hell. I had a soft pretzel. I sat down the whole time, which is my preferred method of attending concerts.
Honestly, same.
Yeah.
We're gonna get some flack on that, but yeah. I like to be comfy while I enjoy my music.
I can't dance for shit, and I know that.
People, yeah. Yeah.
So what's the point?
I don't know. I just went and saw a concert, too, recently. It was... Probably mentioned this last time.
Probably.
Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, and Lucy Dacus, and Boy Genius, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Did you sit down?
No.
Ugh, I had to stand boo. For like 5 hours.
But, no, it was like a very, I mean, it's like very soft music, so it wasn't like a crazy crowd.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a mosh pit?
Yeah. I growing up, went to a lot of concerts, and one of the most vivid memories was it was a Weezer show, but... Weezer was opening for Blink-182 at like a festival.
Oh, wow.
People were moshing to Weezer. Weezer's not a mosh band.
No.
And not only did they mosh to Weezer, but like my glasses got snapped in half and like people I were with, we were just kind of like spread out and lost from each other because it was so crowded. And, a girl we were with, her shoe was stolen, like literally stolen. Like she went home. This was in Kansas. We lived in Oklahoma. The drive back was without shoe because it could not be found.
It was just gone.
People steal your shoes when you crowd surf, I guess.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Were you in a mosh pit at Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah. I hate standing at concerts, but...
Every so often you
can you imagine? No, I had this memory of... I was dating this guy a few years back and we went to a concert and there was a mosh pit. And I had this realization that I don't want to date someone... who will actively participate in a mosh pit. And there was like this moment of truth where I was looking at him like, is he going to jump into this? Like, is he going to do it? And then he didn't. And I let out a breath that I didn't even realize I'd been holding.
I was always just a wall for friends. Cause I was like a giant human. And so I would go with my friends and I would be the wall to protect. Cause you want to be up front.
Right.
But you don't want to deal with that. So I would always somehow end up being like the protective barrier.
Yeah. Well, that's very kind of you.
It was never my choice.
We've also had some rain.
Yeah, rain a lot in LA. Like a lot.
Yeah.
It was pretty nice. I really like it. I don't think people here liked it, but I really liked it.
Mm. I have three separate leaks in my apartment.
So oh, okay.
That's great.
That's fair. I've seen our landlord running around fixing.
Did you have any?
We didn't hear, but I've seen just
you lucky.
The aftermath of.
God, it's everywhere. They've replaced, they've, in quotes, replaced the roof of my apartment building 4 times.
That's probably a straight up lie.
Yeah.
But.
Whatever. It rains like 2 times a year, so.
Yeah, and it just destroys.
Just put some holes out.
LA goes into chaos.
Oh, God. Yeah, it does. Well. What else?
Well, what are your plans for Christmas?
Have we talked about this?
I can't remember.
No, because what was the last, who knows? I don't know. Thanks. I'm going to see my sister in New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
We've talked about it. I don't know if we've talked about it on this podcast.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry if you've heard this. Awesome. I'm going to Oklahoma.
How nice. I almost sang that. You stopped. I stopped myself.
Yeah, it's, it should be cool. It'll be nice to see family.
Uh-huh. What did you get everyone for Christmas? Just kidding. This episode comes out before Christmas.
Yeah, they would. Friends that listen will be like,
yeah.
Well, now that we got all the pleasantries out of the way,
housekeeping's out of the way.
This little movie?
Yeah.
Little's not a fair word. I think this thing's pushing. Let's see here. Green Mile length. This movie is 3 hours and 9 minutes.
I felt every one of those minutes.
Yeah, I guess we should set it up. It's pretty simple to like, I mean, sort of simple to set up as like a basis before we get into it.
Yeah.
Essentially, Tom Hanks is a...
like a prison guard?
He's a prison guard, but yeah. He works on a death row, and his block is called, they call it the Green Mile, because the floor is green. Mm-hmm. And so he and a few other officers are the... It's just basically about them and their life with these prisoners who are waiting to die. As the story progresses, we're introduced to a character named John Coffey, who's a an inmate on death row who has... There's more to him than meets the eye. It's got kind of this surrealist fantasy element to it that I had completely forgotten about.
Oh, really?
I think... I genuinely don't know if I've ever watched this movie all the way through.
Oh.
Like, I know it, and I knew most everything, but I can't remember, like, when I would have sat down and watched it.
Okay.
As a kid and teen. So I think I've just seen it. I don't know if they showed stuff. Maybe it's just on TV.
Yeah.
I cannot remember.
Wow.
Because when he started performing his miracles, I was like, I do not remember this part of the movie.
Wow.
So, yeah. Had you seen it before?
Yeah, I had a boyfriend in high school who I just, in passing, mentioned that I wanted to see The Green Mile. I had no idea what it was about. I just knew Tom Hanks was in it.
Yeah.
And he like, recorded it on his DVR for me one day, and then I went over and I watched it, like, with his dad and him, and it was, like, devastating.
I'm glad that you brought it up, because I'm just imagining, like, you get into, like, a new relationship, and they're like, hey, how about tonight we watch The Green Mile?
Well, that was, like, me this morning. I asked my roommate if she wanted to watch The Green Mile with me. It's a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It was 8 o'clock. She was like, no,
it's
thanks.
Time.
I do you not want to watch that movie.
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's, well, it's some... Like, slight background, it's directed by and written by Frank Darabont, mm-hmm. who also did Shawshank Redemption.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay. It's the same, Shawshank is also another Stephen King story that he adapted, also about prison.
Okay. So the opening is, like, kind of got to be the same looking, right?
Yeah,
like,
kind
with
of,
those window panes and stuff?
It's sort of, they're definitely, like, share a lot of,
yeah.
It's the same vein.
Yeah.
And then he did another Stephen King movie called The Mist in like 2006
that's
or 2007.
That's not good, right?
I really like The Mist.
Wait, which, that's the one?
It's like Thomas Jane and...
In the grocery store?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I kind of
like
that
think
one.
I think it has mixed receptions. I really like it.
I was thinking of The Happening.
Oh.
Which sucks.
Very different movie.
Both invisible things.
And then he went on to, he started The Walking Dead show.
Oh, what?
And then he was let go from it, but somehow he...
For a bad reason or no?
I think creative differences, he left or was let go.
Not like sexual harassment?
No.
Cool. We got one, ladies.
Whew, thank God.
Mm. Okay.
Let's freaking get into it.
Well, okay. Let's like just remember that for a while in Tom Hanks's career, he was doing like 2 movies a year.
Yes.
And then... In our latest run, right around kind of the 2000s, is when he starts doing only one a year.
Yeah.
So last year in our time frame, he did Toy Story 2. And this year, he's doing The Green Mile. He's focusing a lot on, like, his serious roles coming up, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like maybe he was getting choosy and, like, picking really specific stuff he was interested in.
Yeah. Well, and probably movies were just taking longer to make. I don't know, actually. I have no idea. All I'm thinking of is Castaway. But that...
Yeah. I mean, that was, like, a physically... Well, we'll talk about Castaway eventually.
So, it's not that this is, like, necessarily a different role that we've ever seen Tom in, I don't think.
We've no, this seen is... Him, I think like, this is...
The voice of reason, like, the good guy in a group of bad guys.
But also, relatable. Like, kind of morally complicated, too.
Yeah, every man. But the story is definitely different.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's, like... It almost feels like a historical drama, like a fictional historical drama,
mm-hmm.
About like the prison system,
yeah,
and sort of about these layers of, and it's interesting because some of it's spoken and very obvious. Like we have, there's a character named Percy who's sort of our like very very clear villain. Mm-hmm. At no point are you ever like,
I'm maybe for
he's
Percy.
Bad. Yeah, he's just like through and through evil.
Uh-huh.
But it's also like it's a bunch of white men. Who have control of all these, or over all these prisoners, and like the power of that versus they, you know, they're with them day to day. They get to know them, and then they ultimately are the people that watch them die.
Yeah.
And all the other prisoners are white men except for John Coffey, mm-hmm. who's a black man, who's also mentally challenged.
Yes.
And has been accused of murdering two little girls.
Mm-hmm.
By a group of white people. So the movie sort of plays up, or the movie goes the idea that he is discovered holding these two girls with him. And we learn later why he is how he is. I keep pretending like I'm going to spoil it, but like we need to talk about the spoilers. Yeah. John Coffey has like this, it's sort of this like Jesus type thing where he can touch and take away your sickness and your negative, you know, bad things, and he brings like a mouse back to life, and
yeah, he's got these like mystical, he can otherworldly.
See your past.
Mm-hmm.
So that really changes the movie, not the tone of the movie. Just suddenly, you have like this magic power,
right?
In it, and so then it becomes this thing of like all these men as they get to know John Coffey and see what he can actually do, like how they use him, and then. What they do or don't do to save him or let him go through with the fate that the people have decided for him.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about this probably after we've discussed other things, but I wonder really what the ultimate, like, what is the question the movie's asking and what is the question that it's answering? Are they two different? I don't know.
That's actually something I struggle with in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't quite know.
Yeah.
We can go over, it's a pretty loaded cast.
Oh, stacked.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks plays Paul Edgecombe. Oh fuck, my handwriting is really bad.
I actually, as a really quick side bit, I read a thing, that Tom Hanks, they're originally going to use, age up makeup and make him play his older self.
Oh, I'm glad they
and
did not
it
do
just
that.
Looks so goofy. Apparently there's somewhere you can find like, photos of it. I'll see if I can find some.
Okay. Also... That is, like, the exact same opening as Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, with an right? old man going over his life?
Like, I just... Okay. Well, I get it.
Yeah.
So, this says Dan Morse?
David Morse.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. He plays Brutus.
Yeah.
Who was that again?
He was, like, He was kind of, like, the powerhouse of the guards.
Oh yeah, I was like weirdly like attracted to him.
Yeah, he was weird because I think he's played up physically to be like, oh, we don't know about him, and he's actually like a sweetheart.
What else does he do? David Morse.
The actor.
Yeah.
he looks really familiar. He's in Disturbia. Did you ever see Disturbia?
Yeah,
with Shia
he's
LaBeouf?
The creepy guy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not why I'm attracted to him.
I mean, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, would track with my history. Okay, yeah, I liked him. I wrote this just in order of the billing, so it's not Bonnie Hunt is Jan Edgecombe. She plays Tom Hanks' wife. She's pretty much the only woman in this movie, besides the other guy's wife.
Yes.
The sick one. And then the lady at the beginning, oh, whatever. I like disregard that entire plot line. John Coffey, played by Michael Clark Duncan, who you mentioned, we just also didn't mention, he's like a physically massive guy.
Yeah.
Like, like appalling how large he is, which I think is ultimately kind of what led to his death, right?
I do, yeah, I think so. He's in going into his details. So
big, that might be made up.
He is 6'5".
Wow.
That's pretty crazy. Actually, that's actually seems shorter than I thought. Kind of short. But it says that...
How much do you think he weighs?
I don't know. Like I genuinely have no
idea. 350, 400? Maybe. But like pure muscle.
He's, yeah. He, and but also he's like, I mean, he's incredible in the movie.
Uh-huh.
I'll just say that. So good. I think you got a nomination for a supporting actor. But he is like the heart of everything.
You just like, man, he's a standout. All the prisoners, honestly.
Yeah.
I like some really good acting.
It's pretty all around. Cause and there's people that like I love now that I had forgotten. Like Sam Rockwell. Big Sam Rockwell fan.
Oh, really?
His, and I forget that he's in this. Uh-huh. Which is so weird because he's one of those people that like, doesn't really age.
No, and he embodies that character so well.
He's like a monster.
Yeah.
And then...
Sam Rockwell plays Wild Bill.
Yeah.
Bad man. He's like Percy's... he's just Percy. If Percy did what he really wanted to do. And if he had the courage, if he wasn't such a coward, Percy would be Wild Bill.
And we have some crossover too.
Oh yeah,
my boy. We have some other. We have two people actually. They're both or one. We have
Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper
plays Dean Stanton.
Yes, and he was in Saving Private Ryan with Tom.
He's the sharpshooter.
Yeah,
sniper.
And then we have Gary Sinise, who was Lieutenant Dan, who is in this as well with Tom. And I think Gary Sinise was in another movie.
He was.
But
what was he in? My
brain ceases to function when I
it
need
was
these
like
facts.
I know.
Oh, I need to just write down. I'm always like, yeah, you remember that?
No,
and then I don't ever.
I also think Steamboat Willie was in this. I'm just kidding.
I was like, oh,
he's just in every movie, and no one can figure out if it's really him or not.
There's
a callback.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I also wrote down Michael Jeter plays Edouard Delacroix.
Oh yes, I'm not super familiar with that actor, but he's really good in this.
So good.
That's sort of the thing with The Green Mile, is it is, from like a technical standpoint, it is impeccably shot and crafted and acted.
Yeah,
like it is a beautiful and well-made movie.
Yeah, I agree.
It's 80% of it is a single location, and is like a very drab, dull. But somehow, like the way that they use lighting and the way that it becomes super focused on characters because there's not a lot to look at and they use everything you look at very carefully. I think single location stuff like that's really interesting to me because it's very hard to keep people interested, especially when you're pushing 3 hours.
Minutes. Yeah,
but maybe that's the point, because we're, as the audience, we're watching them in prison and we're having to spend a lot of time with them, and I don't think the movie doesn't drag, but it does feel long, and I think it's supposed to, because we're sort of with them while they're in prison.
And okay.
Knowing, I don't know, I feel like you don't ever like think, at least for me, you don't ever really think that good things are coming.
Right. Well, oh, we forgot one other super special character.
Who?
Mr. Jingles.
Oh. The little mouse.
Oscar award winner, Mr. Jingles, the circus mouse.
He's pretty great.
That, I want to know why, like, what about it? What about like the human brain? I know it's not just my brain. Like, we watched a lot of people die in this movie.
Yes.
But the only death that like fucked me up was Mr. Jingles.
I think it's the way that they play with emotions with that, where there's like friendship connections and always like an uncertainty to everything. But Mr. Jingles is pure and has like grown attached to this inmate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done nothing but...
And you know that he's like... He's a source of, like, the one source of light there. And it's like he gets to come back to life and live forever, I guess.
Yeah, kind
of
horrifying.
I hate that part of the movie.
But it's also, it's interesting because you bring that up, is I think one thing I wrote down about this that I think is really fascinating, and I think maybe the moral question of this, is the movie spends a lot of time making you like people whose backgrounds you know, who are like waiting to die for the things that they did.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Did we learn what he did?
Who?
That the guy with the mask.
We didn't. No. And the reason that Wild Bill is in jail is not for his crime that he's ultimately punished for.
Because we find out. Yeah, essentially, just to cut to the chase, we find out that John Coffey is innocent.
Mm-hmm.
When John Coffey touches people, he can heal them and he can see their past. And he sees, when Wild Bill grabs him, he sees Wild Bill's past and learns that Wild Bill is the one who killed the little girls that John Coffey's being
accused of killing. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because they sort of play with you where, like, you know that these people are, like, why do we enjoy spending time with these people when they're being sentenced to death for these crimes that were bad enough for that?
Yeah. Well, I think a big portion of the movie makes you believe that John Coffey did do what he's accused of, because we only get to see him holding the dead little girls and crying and saying, I wish I could take it back, or I tried to, but I couldn't.
Yeah. And I think that's manipulation on the directing part, where it's making you as the audience go through a similar mindset of what these guards would think.
Right.
And it kind of uses like the mob mentality of like, here's 30 people that chased him down and saw him with him who are fighting that he did this. And like, how do we work through arguing this? And it's in the 30s. It's like Great Depression era. Like we don't have the resources and technology we do today. So it's just word of mouth. And there's all these white folks who are screaming murder, and all these white folks being judge, jury, and executioner. So it's just a chain of bad.
It is a lot of bad. Doug Huntington plays Percy.
Oh, yes.
I think is now maybe now my least favorite character. He might have pushed Jenny out from first place. I have never hated something so much.
It's really strange how they deal with Percy.
God, he's like a sociopath.
He is pure evil.
And you can see, oh my God, they set it up so well.
But you don't spend any time thinking he's going to have redemption.
Yeah.
There's one scene where the only chance you have to like pity him.
Yeah.
But then everything else just feels, and maybe again, that's just playing with the audience. Like he's just, I mean, can you say some of the stuff he did?
Yeah. He did some fucked up shit. He like clearly enjoys like watching people die. He'll hurt prisoners. He hurts the nice French guy that we like that has
like in the first
mouse.
Like few minutes, right?
Quickly,
breaks his fingers.
Yeah, it's clear that he's kind of like, at least it's clear to me that he's taken this position of power in a prison where probably a lot of people don't want that job.
Yeah,
because he gets to exert his power over other people, and he has like a justified reason to do it. Justified being in quotes. Yeah.
We learn that he's also connected to, he has people
in high places
that have gotten him this job. And so they can't just get rid of him.
Yeah. He's untouchable.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the minor things.
We also meet him when he's bringing in a prisoner when we first meet him. And I think it's John Coffey.
Yeah.
And he's just screaming, dead man walking.
Oh, that's right.
Like the entire time to the entire prison yard. It's this weird like walk of shame he's giving him.
Yeah.
It's really,
he's specifically cruel to the French guy.
Yeah.
He hates that he has this mouse friend. He kills the mouse just to make him upset.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, like, the most egregious thing that he does is when the French man is ultimately executed, it's at Percy's hand, which, like, I get that's how the system is.
Yeah.
But he purposely, he doesn't use the wet sponge that's set up earlier as like the one like merciful thing about this killing.
They put a wet sponge on the
head to direct the electrical
current. Yeah, it brings all the electrical current. So it should be like, they call it like a bullet to the brain, basically. Yeah.
And it's like a very excruciating scene. I had to fast forward through that.
The scene, it is so long. And I think that could have been directed in a way that made it super over the top and like too much, but
yeah.
I think they do it the way you have to feel it,
yeah,
and you do because it keeps, I was surprised how much they show just him writhing around.
Oh God.
And you're watching the people watch and
yeah,
it's I remember
watching it the first time and I was like, I'm not doing that again.
Well, then you think, cause they talk about in the scene, you know, Tom Hanks yells like, or someone yells like, just turn it off. And he's like, we can't, like,
he's still alive.
He's alive. And like in so much pain, if we stop, like it has to just be.
And it's so interesting because I think removed for whatever this guy did that ended, landed him on death row. I'm sure it would be really easy removed from context to be like, yeah, he should die. I mean, depending on your,
remember that's why they don't tell you.
Yeah.
Like what exactly he did.
Yeah. I mean, or nobody deserves to fucking go that. I mean,
yeah. It seems so barbaric.
It does. God, it's crazy. They don't do the electric chair anymore, do they?
I genuinely don't know.
I feel like it's some states do.
I mean, look. No, it says as of 2015, the only places in the world still use the electric chair as an option are Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia.
That's sad.
And then Arkansas and Oklahoma laws provide for its use should lethal injection ever be held to be unconstitutional.
Interesting.
Weird. I cannot imagine. I mean, I can't imagine it then. I can't imagine that now. That seems so out of control. Like, mad scientist.
It
like,
does.
It looks like the easiest way to make a villain type of mode. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's to, like...
So we see three executions in this movie.
Yeah.
The first one is to learn. It's like pretty much there to serve as like a learning experience for the audience. Second one is to show how it can go horribly wrong.
Well, and the first one's on another minority. It's a Native American inmate.
Oh, that's right.
Who I don't think we know about his no. background either.
But we know him for so little time. And then the last one is John Coffey. Which that scene made me cry. I watched that scene and I cried. Actually, I might have fast forwarded through that too. Oh, you know, something that we do learn, that I think we wouldn't know otherwise is John Coffey can experience the pain of other people, not just by touching them, but
being in the, it's kind of undefined.
Like he can choose to do it. It felt like he was doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was trying to take like share in it and take it away, or if he can't. If it's like such an empathy thing that he can't help it.
Yeah, it's hard to figure that out.
It turns really interesting because, in terms of the story, the prisoners. Well, I guess we can sort of talk about how John Coffey is used in the story.
Sure. Yeah.
As we said before, he can heal things and people. So like. Tom Hanks' character has a bladder infection.
Mm-hmm.
So it hurts to pee and he has no sex life at home.
Mm-hmm.
And in a really, I mean, it's like kind of a scary scene at first because you have no idea what's happening. John Coffey grabs Tom Hanks. It's after like a scuffle with Wild Bill and Tom Hanks hit in the
groin. We should talk about that fight scene after this.
Yeah. And John Coffey basically grabs him and like grabs his junk and heals him.
Yeah.
And like, how do you, only Tom Hanks sees it.
And that's the only time that we really, that's the first time we see that he can do that. Right. So we're also like, he really seems jarring. So nice. Why is he hurting him?
But you think it's like, cause it feels like this crazy, like I think for a second I was like, is this, I don't remember this like assault scene.
Oh, right.
I thought John Coffey was like, and then you learn pretty fast because it's like glowing. And then he like spits out all these like bugs from his mouth.
Yeah.
And then it's just sort of, I'm trying to imagine like the first time someone saw this knowing nothing about it, like how jarring that must be after everything you've just watched.
Yeah. And then Tom goes home and makes sweet love to his wife.
There's a few moments in this like that Tom. That are just like so sappy happy that feel like almost out of place. You're like, I don't think I deserve to feel happy for a second.
Yeah, I read this book by Jodi Picoult that is like kind of in this similar vein where it's like a prisoner who's on, he wants to give his heart to a little girl. So he doesn't want to be, he wants to be hanged instead of. So his heart will still beat, so he can give it to this little girl. And the mom has this dilemma of, like, should I let a bad man do this good thing that will, like, ultimately save my daughter? Like, something like that. And it turns out the prisoner can, like, perform miracles. He might be, like, the second coming of Jesus Christ. And that's, like, basically what this story is. I like, kind of roll my eyes at it.
Yeah.
It's really, it's just like you take like the biggest like dilemma, like moral dilemma that someone could experience, and like, yeah, it could be that Jesus is being put to death wrongly. I mean, what other than that? That like Jesus is a homeless person.
Yeah.
That we've like not helped.
Well, and that sort of starts my first real issue with Green Mile, is that John Coffey is the only, after the Native American character is executed, he's the only minority, and he's portrayed as like this mentally handicapped black man who has like magical powers and just saves all these white people.
Yeah.
It's really, and I want to believe, because I feel like it was not made with any ill intention of like, maybe it was, but I don't think it was. It just comes across currently, like on a revisit in 2018. It's a kind of weird poor taste.
Yeah. He's just a plot device.
Yeah. His life and death in his entire like premise in the film is to help these people. Like, it kind of becomes a story of Paul. I need to call him Paul. This sort of moral story of people being changed because of what this guy did, and it takes him dying ultimately to
get them there. Like, specifically Paul.
Yeah.
Like, Paul's the one that we get the end with. All those questions I did not care to have answered anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, I wonder what happens to Paul after all this. Like, no, I fucking want to know.
What's another, it's like the same thing I have, like that issue with Saving Private Ryan having those bookends. It's kind of the same here.
We do not need that.
Yeah,
sorry,
that was a weird way to say that. We got your point. Like,
it
almost kind of takes away I guess it's sort of the ending then puts the implication of like, because I think he says like, am I being punished?
Right.
Type of thing. And I think that's sort of interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe you need that, because if you don't have that, it just becomes like, oh, he saved them.
Yeah.
But if you cut ahead and you're like, he saved them, and now he's sort of just suffering through a life he can't exit.
Yes.
So maybe the darkness of that is important. And mm-hmm. when I say it out loud, having not really thought about it, I think maybe I do agree with that.
Yeah, it seems too convenient for me.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not convenient. I agree with you there. It's just very like sentimental and kind of sappy. And strangely simple. Like, the plotting, it feels, I don't know, it kind of tricks you into thinking it's very intricate, but it's like a very pretty basic kind of this Jesus metaphor of people having to change. There's weird moments with John Coffey where he fixes Paul, and then what's the next thing he fixes? The mouse?
I think so.
So the mouse gets killed, Mr. Jingles gets killed, and he is saved.
Mr. Jingles back to life.
And then they, in a intricate like set, the police captor, the police warden, I believe, his wife has cancer and is dying. And they stage, it's James Cromwell who plays to mention him. Mm-hmm. I always think of him as the farmer from Babe, and it's really weird for me to see him like dropping F-bombs.
Oh, yeah.
But they basically stage.
And his wife is Patricia Clarkson?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Who she also doesn't age.
No, she doesn't.
It's insane. And her range, playing like this, and I think of like, she's the mom in Easy A.
Yeah.
Crazy. She's incredible. But they stage a breakout to take John Coffey to the police warden's house and heal the wife.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to a degree in that. They have to convince, they've broken out a prisoner who's on death row, bring him to the warden's house, talk the warden into like letting him into the room with his wife. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a nice moment together, I guess, with the two of them. Like, at least in performance from her performance to him.
Yeah.
But again, it's really weird because it's another thing of like, they use him to save someone and then ultimately don't save him.
Just bring him right back to jail. That whole storyline about the warden and his wife and her deteriorating mental condition because of the tumor in her brain, and then their relationship to Tom Hanks and Bonnie Hunt, Edgecombs. Their relationship to that family, why they feel like this sadness about her becoming something that she isn't due to her illness. That whole storyline drags on for so long.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like the payoff is where, I mean, I get the reason that we see John Coffey save her is because ultimately he then chooses to take that sickness and hurt the person that like did this awful, Like, he takes the sickness from Patricia Clarkson and spits it into Percy.
Yeah.
Well, that, and then Percy is, like, so fucked up in his brain and taken over by the bugs or something. Like, this whole thing is so convoluted. And then he shoots the guy who's already on death row and is going to die anyway. But, okay.
That's when I think it really gets confusing, because if it is supposed to be a Christ allegory, that the change where John Coffey suddenly dishes out punishment then becomes like this really morally and religious confusing moment.
Yeah.
Because now he's decided, I mean, he's seen into them. So he says, he's like, I've seen who they are and they are bad. But that means he gets to like be the deciding factor. Like their free will is gone.
Yeah.
And the movie doesn't ever give you a thing where you're like, oh, I feel bad for them. Like they're built, Percy and Wild Bill are built where you should not feel bad for them. But it's very weird. It starts to like kind of fall apart as it tries to do that.
Yeah. I truly think I could have done without that whole element.
I think so. I think if they put like the fantastic element or the...
Oh, that, and then also just the storyline of the wife.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't care about it.
I think having it... I mean, genuinely, if they had the entire thing never leave that... You walk in with them in the beginning into that prison, into the Green Mile, and never left would make it this really claustrophobic and like kind of... more tense thing, but having them leave just feels weird.
Well, so what do we take away from that? Like, what is the point of that storyline? To show that John Coffey's flawed?
I don't know. I thought I could. I was like, I remember John Coffey ends up in the chair.
Yeah.
So I was trying to think of this scene, and I was like, maybe I misremembered, or it's like a flash, you know, a fake out. But I thought that. It's a plot set up that he's going to be redeemed and, like, let go.
Yeah.
But then when they sort of hint that they'll give him a chance to let, like, if we let you out and you could run, and he doesn't take it.
He doesn't want it.
Which, again, is, like, the Christ metaphor, but this is after he's used his power to kill.
Yeah.
And ruin.
I don't get what... I would love for someone to tell me.
Yeah, I think I need to dive into some... If listeners have... takes on it, but I think I need to like look into some articles, because there's got to be some stuff, because it's very confusing on a moral level.
It is.
And as a religious allegory, like, more so.
Nothing ties itself together.
And maybe there is. Maybe there's like a really deep-seated like breakdown of like what these mean, and I'm like, it didn't take with me this time, but I just felt that it seemed kind of simplistic and then weird, and it's...
Yeah. It's weird. I do feel like I moved on a little bit too soon from what you were talking about John Coffey and his purpose in the film. He's basically used as like, he's a device to like move the story when the story I feel should be more about his character.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's just like a choice. But one thing that I do think is interesting that you mentioned is that the only people of color in this story are that. They're just devices. And the story is centered around Paul Edgecombe and a million other white dudes. And I think that, like you said, it's not malicious, but it is a product of, I don't know, privilege isn't the right word, but there's a reason that a lot of popular media focus on that, because that's one experience that has only ever been given a chance to be shown.
Yeah.
For so fucking long. And it's boring. Like, it's really not satisfying to me anymore. Yeah. To watch another story about...
And it almost feels like High and Mighty.
Yeah.
We're like, but look, they get along. It feels really...
They're doing good. They're helping these guys.
But it's not their story. Mm-mm. And that's why it seems detrimental. Because they're in it.
Yeah.
But you haven't given them a story that's their own. Like, and if the movie focused on John Coffey and his morality and like who he is and like how he feels having to like make these decisions. Like if you discover that he has these powers and then we're spending a lot of time with him figuring out like who does he think he is? How does he live knowing what he's capable of? How does he choose? That would be really interesting.
It would be really interesting.
Cause I think the setup of having it in the 30s and being about this like racist and like all white men in power prison system would be really interesting and really topical. I mean, this is 99. Put that out today with that type of mind frame, still absolutely topical.
This is 1999?
Yeah.
Oh, then I definitely was wrong earlier when I said 2000s once a year. It was probably like 98.
But this is the last 99. This is the last 90s Tom movie.
Oh, okay.
It's fascinating.
I don't know.
I don't feel educated enough to know. That's just how I feel. And I'd like to read some like film scholar stuff about
that. That's true.
That.
I could, yeah. I mean, out of... No, I'll save this for the end.
Okay.
So that fight scene that happens right before... when Tom gets kicked in the genitals by Wild Bill. That's an interesting scene because we get to really see what a bad guy Wild Bill is.
Yeah.
But we also get to see... We get a lot of information about Percy, what a little coward he is. And I think...
Do you think you're supposed to pity him in that moment?
No. I think you're supposed to be disgusted by him. Because he's a man who so desperately seeks, like, revenge for who knows what. We don't know that motivation. And he can't even, like, exert. He can only be an asshole when he's protected. Yeah. It's, like, fucking gross. But that the choreography I thought of that fight scene was just fascinating because it's all slow, like, how a real fight probably is. A lot of action movies, it's, like, punching. It's sound effects and it's over. And you don't know who's, like, whatever. This was so slow that you felt it all. And it just felt like real dudes really fighting. I don't know. I kind of liked it, actually.
I do too. And it sets up sort of this dangerous man.
Uh-huh.
Who you don't know quite who what he is or what he's done yet, but you understand. And I think Wild Bill's really interesting because he's, like, this out-of-control man. But at the same time, every time they, like, punish him and put him in, like, the room itself.
Solitary confinement or the punishment.
He has, like, a breakdown type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting how they play with him.
Yeah. Well, like, do they pick him up from a mental hospital? They pick him up from the same room that Percy eventually goes into, right? At Briarcliff?
Maybe.
I feel like it is because the windows feel the same.
Yeah.
So they pick him up from a mental hospital. I don't know. I mean, there's also just the whole conversation about mental illness and prison and...
Well, like how it's I think that in regards to the prison is really interesting as a thing, but I don't think that's the message of the thing. I think it's used as like a punishment device.
Oh yeah.
Where like you're like, oh, look what happened to him.
Yeah. He went to the place where he was gonna go anyway.
Yeah. Well, and there's like the reveal of the mental hospital thing as if it's like this curse. And I guess I don't know what the worldview on it has shifted. It's still shifting now where it's like a positive thing to talk about. But back then I imagine it was, you know, this thing, but it's used almost like a horror thing with like a mental hospital.
Yeah.
Whereas if you made that now and like made it proper, you'd have it be like, look, he's getting help. And
yeah. He's awesome. Getting the help he deserves. That's an interesting conversation, I think.
I mean, we're talking about a lot of negatives and there are a lot of negatives to discuss, but I think the characterization is really interesting. They spend a lot of time. Minus really, I wish Percy had more, there was more of a dynamic to him that made him still evil and bad, but where you sort of, there's any semblance of like where you can just try to understand him, but there is none. Mm-mm. He's just pure evil. And maybe that's, I mean, maybe that's a world that I'm just, you know, ignoring and not realizing is a thing. There's some people are just, that Percy is a real person to people. People have met that guy. And it probably is very true.
Yeah. And he could be a foil to John Coffey. But then there's that question about, like you said, John Coffey ultimately making himself the judge.
Yeah.
It's confusing. I do think the movie would be a lot cleaner without that element.
Yeah. And I can't tell if I'm just missing, if there's like, if that... is supposed to say and like really send something home that didn't hit me. I'll have to look into it because I think that is interesting. But it does really change if you have a message, and I don't really know what the message is of the movie. If I just want to tell someone, like, what was it like ultimately about? I don't know. It's people.
Is it
had to be around bad things and deal with people in power and deal with things that confuse them, and then now they live on and one's being punished for it potentially.
Yeah, and if we simplify it to like. Is the death penalty just, or is it moral? Is it right? We don't get an answer about that.
Yeah, I think that the idea of keeping that ambiguous is really interesting because the idea that Paul, because he talks about it as an old man, like the job he did and like what it kind of did to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of fascinating. We're like, that's just his job and his life. That's how he looks at it.
Right.
That's not an excuse. I mean, that's the excuse he's using, but...
Right.
That sort of idea is, it's just the norm to them.
Yeah.
They get attached to these people, but at the end, it's still do what they got to do.
Yeah. And we walk away from it being like, oh, that thing was so horrible. But, and I guess we don't know what the other guys did, but we can assume that they were there for a reason, blah, blah, blah. The only person who you can kind of make the case that like deserved it didn't even get executed in the the legal way. So I don't even know if we're supposed to take that away either. It's just like, I don't know.
I think it sets itself up to have a lot of really interesting questions. And I think it maybe asks a lot of interesting questions, not always directly, but then for me doesn't follow through and give any sort of semblance of like what the creator's intentions were.
Yeah.
I think it's left to us to decide, which sometimes I like that in filmmaking and different art. But I also, like, I think with this, I'd like to know a little bit of what the filmmaker thinks.
How did you feel when you finished this movie?
Just sort of not, I don't know, I felt kind of sad and indifferent about the world. Not in like a, like there were moments that gave me strong emotional reactions. I think we agree on the ending thing that kind of killed it for me. And I was like, okay, I felt.
Well, it's supposed to make it palatable. So you walk out like, wow, I really learned something, I think.
Yeah, I think it's got that Oscar movie type of ending. That's like, here's the thing that you now know. Here's the thing you now believe. But I don't know what it's asking us to believe.
Yeah.
In magic, maybe?
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because this whole story could be real.
Yeah.
It could. It carries the same weight if John Coffey has magical powers or not. If he's just a wrongly convicted man.
That was the one thing I had finishing it that I wondered is if he's retelling this story to a woman. And I had this sort of thought of maybe those details make it a better story that he's telling.
Okay.
Because, I mean, since they bookend it like that, it now becomes all through Paul's voice.
That's a really good point.
Which means that it could be unreliable.
Yeah.
He's so old now and so removed. Like, what does he remember exactly? And if these magical elements are just these pieces, which I think that's kind of, makes it sort of interesting.
Well, because a urinary tract infection or whatever that was.
Yeah.
Those can, like, be really serious. But he's even said, like, it will pass. Mm. So it would eventually go away.
Yeah.
Right? Or kill him. Like a kidney. It becomes a kidney infection, right?
My cat got him a lot, but he's fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We give him some meds.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, antibiotics normally will get rid of it.
That's the research we should be doing. We should have had notes from, like, 1930s antibiotics on urinary tract infections.
Yeah. My deepest regret.
But I think with that, if you bookend the movie with that and have that as an idea of like maybe this isn't all truth.
Yeah. Well, so can anything else be explained that isn't, that's like a magical thing that happens?
Well, I think of like the rat gets stepped on.
Yeah.
And he picks it up and puts it in his hands and then we don't ever get like a really clear view.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one's tougher, but it could just be another.
And then Percy like fucking swallowing a ton of bugs and then shooting.
That's harder to explain.
Percy
shooting him makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Well, and they also set up, one thing I think we didn't really talk about is that all of the other prison guards are friends and they sort of team up against Percy and like on a few occasions, like do what they have to do in their mind to, so like when they want to break John Coffey out, they lock Percy up in the solitary confinement room and like gag him and leave him in there so they can sneak him out.
That could also explain why he does that.
Yeah.
He just goes fucking crazy. Sorry, is that what you were going to say?
That's interesting. No, I think there's little moments like that that maybe set up that some of this could be.
I love that. I love the movie now.
Yeah. That maybe there's this deeper.
Yeah. That they just did a bunch of bad things and then they explain it away with magic. You were continuing to talk about Percy. Sorry.
No, just that was just how I was trying to.
Yeah, justify. He's like the bad guy that they all team up against and do. I mean, they do bad things to him.
But I kind of, I like that they're not, I mean, they're frequently painted as not, they are not as bad as Percy, quote unquote. But they still do things that are wildly illegal and inappropriate.
Yeah.
Threatening and.
Well, we're supposed to be like, wow, these are good guys just doing their job, making the best of it. I got that message loud and clear.
Well, they do that when they're testing, when they do the rehearsal for the electrocutions, and they're just making jokes and playing around with it.
I know, but then there's this, like, treat this with respect and don't be so irreverent. It's confusing.
I like the joke, because I feel like it really sets you up, like, their mindset, where, like, to them, this is day-to-day.
Yeah.
And that's sort of crazy to think about, because when we as the viewer watch the executions go down, we're like,
yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Especially John Coffey's because he doesn't like the dark and he does not want to be covered. So we watch everyone else's face is covered, but John Coffey, we have to watch.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the last thing I wrote down is John Coffey choosing not to, or they sort of give him the option that they can try and get him out, and he chooses not to.
Yeah.
And he tells Paul a few things of like, just be, I don't know, sort of like a...
Something with love, like kill them with your love or something. Doesn't he say that?
Something like that. I could probably find...
When he grabs his hand at the end.
Yeah. And that, I just can't quite tell how we're supposed to think outside of the like overt religious metaphor. What are we supposed to take from that?
Yeah. I do wonder. Are you looking up the quote?
I was going to say, cause he says they discussed the idea of an escape. And the thing, that was the thing. That was what I meant. Cause I was trying to figure out why I wrote what I wrote. The idea, Paul is worried that if John Coffey is something that, like, God sent, as, like, an actual, like, messenger of God, or an angel, I think he calls him, then is he sentencing an angel to death?
Yeah.
So then Paul, it's sort of a thing of, he's, like, distraught over it, with him being innocent, but also this idea of, like, will he be judged mm-hmm. as the person who killed? And he's worried about that. So in the end, it's this, I think... reasonably selfish thing where he's like, if you're an angel and I kill you, am I
bad?
And maybe he is, because he continues to live.
Yeah.
I keep finding new things where I'm like, hey, maybe I didn't give that enough time.
Okay.
But then John decides he wants to die because he feels everything people experience. And I think that's just
understandable.
And there's a really nice scene where his like last request, where he watches the movie
and eats the meatloaf and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really sweet. Well, you started to talk about things you liked about the movie, and then I cut you off to shit on the movie some more. What are some things that you did like?
No, I think I sort of talked about
you did talk
the movie. I think it's from like a technical standpoint,
yeah,
very well crafted. Performances around the board are mm-hmm. wonderful. Cinematography is beautiful. There's a lot of small moments and little details, and I think characterization for a lot of people is really good and interesting. I think most of my issues that for me hurt the movie are in plotting and sort of the characters that don't get the same attention to there, and just sort of some of the needlessly, like you were talking about, some offshoot subplots that just don't add. They sort of reinforce things we already know.
Yeah. I enjoyed the characterization specifically. I think as like a character study, this movie has a ton of really amazing things. Some characters and feelings that you don't normally get to consider. Specifically like prisoners. That's like really interesting to see that humanity of them. I like the visual element. It felt like some of it, and it was probably just the lighting. It was like I was looking at a painting.
Yeah.
The colors were so like... it's like not vivid. It's like smeared and soft. There's something I really liked about that.
It felt...
Yeah, how did it look on your TV?
I mean, pretty cool.
Yeah, I bet. I watched it on Netflix. Did you watch it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay. That was probably... they have like 4K on there, huh?
I think so.
Whatever. Sorry. That's not interesting. I felt like I was watching like a storybook or a painting. I liked that.
Yeah, and that well, with you saying that sort of feeds in more to like, is this, what of this is truth and what is fabrication by Paul Edgecombe, now 108
I like that,
years
and
old.
I hope if there isn't a think piece written about that, I would like you to.
Make one?
Yeah.
Next year's the 20th anniversary, so maybe we'll get some... Usually when there's an anniversary, we get like kind of a renewed, people will go back and like talk about it, how they thought of it then, what they thought of it now.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
So how do you compare, is that, you feel good?
I think so, yeah.
Me too. How will you compare this movie to other movies? I would say maybe in the same vein as this movie from Tom.
Shawshank Redemption, I mean, sorry, this is from not Tom, from like, but in like general movies, Shawshank Redemption is the same writer director.
Yeah.
And it's like considered like one of the... I feel like it's on like the top tens of all times for a lot of lists. Like it's considered by a lot of people to be one of the end alls.
Okay.
And that was made like 6-7 years before this.
Oh,
which is interesting.
That is interesting.
But I don't know. I would put it as like middle lower tier for me. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff I like, but more that frustrates and confuses, and I also wonder like, is maybe morally wrong and uh-huh. confusing to me. I would probably put it at like a 3 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah. And out of all that, I think the movies that we could compare this to that Tom has done similar, like movies that come out during the time of year when they're eligible for Oscar contention yeah. or whatever. I'm saying that word wrong. Like Forrest Gump and Saving Private Ryan. It's forgettable to me. It doesn't stand out as like, oh my God, if you want to see yeah. a Tom Hanks performance, fucking Green Mile. It feels like needlessly cruel and sad, but I mean, it's not, maybe that's just cause that's not the type of movie I like.
Yeah. I totally feel what you're saying there. I think it, yeah, I don't.
This might be something I regret saying, but I have to say it. I don't even feel like this performance is particularly special from Tom Hanks. It doesn't really show us something that I don't think we've seen before.
No, I think it's like a very reserved and like gets to be sort of this kind of singular.
It's
like
comforting. He doesn't
do much change. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I still absolutely enjoy it, but it's not like a challenging, like especially.
Yeah. And maybe that's not the point. Like. Yeah. Maybe not every role Tom Hanks has to do is groundbreaking and earth shattering. Maybe it's just that the story is what compelled him.
I think so, because Tom Hanks is sort of this surrogate for the everyman. Mm-hmm. And he's so easy to relate to him in most everything he does. And I think it's no different in this. And we're supposed to, I think that is specifically catered to be used to make you feel for his character and what he goes through, but when the plot around the character we find problematic, it sort of takes that effort that away from it,
yeah.
and then it just becomes like just kind of a normal thing.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
If that makes any sense?
Good, another podcast where we agree.
Someday we have all of 2000s, Tom. Maybe you know, Da Vinci Code's coming up.
Oh yeah,
next year, and maybe that'll be our.
That'll be it.
Or I'll rewatch it.
We keep hyping it up. You're going to end up loving that movie, I bet. What's our next movie?
Ooh, good question. I should have looked.
That's fine.
Our next Tom Hanks movie, when we come back into the new year, is the 2000 Robert Zemeckis directed Castaway.
Oh, damn. Really?
Yeah. That's crazy. I saw that movie in theaters. I was only 10.
My jaw's dropped. I didn't realize they came out so close together.
I didn't either. I thought that was later.
What in the world?
And then he's got, Castaway is next. And then we've got Road to Perdition.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Catch Me If You Can, which is
yeah.
one of my favorite Tom movies and one of my favorite Spielberg movies.
Okay.
I'm very excited to revisit that. Well, we get, okay, we have a Robert Zemeckis, we have a Sam Mendes, we have a Steven Spielberg, and then a Coen Brothers Tom.
Oh my God.
Lady Killers.
Everything's coming up, Daniel. It's going to be a good year. I can feel it.
I think so.
Okay. Oh, I have something. Time for our next segment. Hey, Tom Hanks. Sorry. I just remembered. Tom Hanks was, I have to open up my browser that has it. He was recently honored, at the Heroes and History Makers Gala. He was an honoree. And the conversation was specifically about veterans. And Tom, there was a lot of articles about this specific thing because, first of all, it was like some interesting press that Tom did. But he talked about a few things. He made a point that he doesn't think that we'd be able to modern day tell the story of soldiers that are fighting in Afghanistan. We couldn't tell their story appropriately. He just like doesn't think that we have the capability to do it, which is interesting from an actor and mm-hmm. a storyteller for him to say that, saying that he would prefer like a detailed documentary. And that he also, who Tom Hanks has become, we don't know too much about his political views. I mean, we can assume a lot of things based on who he will like go on trips with and like endorse all those things. But he hasn't been particularly outspoken about, like, his dislike of Trump that I've seen. It's just more like he said he would never go to the White House. So I guess that's our answer when he was doing press for the Post last year. But he did say one thing that would make him like lobby to Trump or like have a private meeting with Trump would be about veterans and how to offer them more resources if they're wounded and to take care of them after they leave the war, which I thought was interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's something that he does seem to be very passionate about.
Yeah. I think his stuff with Saving Private Ryan, because he involved in that and like helped create the Pacific and Band of Brothers. Like, and I think he helped produce a bunch of documentaries about veterans and wars.
That are very good.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Well, you know, some minisodes later.
Yeah.
And get into the Tom Hanks producer.
Would be, if we're ever fortunate enough to have a conversation with him, that would be something I would love to speak to him about. Anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you have any Talk Toms or anything?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it's the end of the year.
I know. Oh, wait. Didn't we do something similar for our year thing, though?
About the year?
No, we didn't. We talked about the movies that we liked.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about the year.
Oh, I was just saying we did it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like lobbing something to set up.
Oh, no. 2018 is done.
We did it.
We did a full year. People have been listening, which is very strange.
It is strange. It's cool that this will live forever.
Yeah. And almost. Like someday come back and people are like, did you hear what they said about the Green Mile? They didn't get it.
They just didn't understand it. Or like if you have kids someday, they'll listen to this. You'll be like, wow, Dad had some hot takes.
Yeah. Dad was an asshole. Yeah, so we're Green Mile wraps up 90s Tom.
Wow.
As we wrap up 2018 Josie and Daniel.
What a year.
So we start fresh next year.
Yeah.
It's gonna be crazy.
I think I've said this before. My ability to like enjoy movies and understand them has improved significantly because of this podcast.
If you make someone talk about like one thing for an hour, it does help you to like I gotta think of something to say.
Yeah, I gotta have an opinion on this rather than text the whole time.
I like it. I have yet to go back and like revisit older stuff because it'll just make me nostalgic.
Yeah.
But it'll be fun to like start go back to like Big and be like, how did we talk about it?
Uh-huh.
Because I remember back then we were like, wow, 40 minutes. We did really good. And then Saving Private Ryan, we're like, an hour and a half. Wow.
No one's gonna listen to this. Yeah, it's a fun little project. Okay. Well, that's it.
That's
right.
It.
If you're interested in continuing the conversation, you can find us on our website, talkintom.com. That's talking without the G. We've got Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all social media stuff. Our handle is
Tom Hanks Tomcast.
Yep. And one thing I haven't said in a while that I always mean to say is that if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes.
Oh yeah, we'll read it.
Read it on the show.
You can be Pod Hanks Tomcast famous.
Yeah. It also just makes us get a little bit more eyes on the project.
Yeah. Which is always cool.
It's not the goal, but it's...
Well, it's nice because we have segments that are like time relevant, but everything else just sort of lives on. And like if you watch the movie, go back. If you haven't seen the movie and you watch it later, come back and we'll still talk about it.
Yeah.
We've seen them.
Yeah.
And Josie, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Oh my gosh,
Happy
you do. And to you and yours and your family and everybody.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll have a cool announcement, but we're not going to say anything till January.
Yeah, I'm pregnant.
Oh,
I spoiled it. Okay, well, good year, right? My name's Josie.
I'm Daniel.
Hey, thanks for listening.